it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest is the athletic director at the University of Portland, Scott Lakem, joining us live via satellite, I'm assuming. Where's your office now? Is your office at home? Is your office over on the Bluff? Where are you working from?
About 3 days a week in the Lake Oswego office and about 2 days a week on the Bluff in a very empty child center.
Yeah, that's got to be eerie to look around. We've been looking around the Pac-12 and around the college athletics world. How does football play into your world? Because I know while your conference doesn't have football, it is a gatekeeper to a lot of other things.
It's everything, John. I mean, nobody is pulling for the Pac-12 harder than I am right now, and for them to get football going. If football can be played safely nationally, I think that paves the way for basketball and soccer and everything else to follow suit. I think more importantly, and the discussions I know you've been involved with, and I've been reading John Wilner and others, is that, you know, nobody on the West Coast is moving right now. I mean, we're watching the Sun Belt and the Southland and some other leagues playing, but the West Coast is dead silent. We need somebody to kind of march through the door and have all of us follow it. I think yesterday was great. There was a glimmer of hope with basketball start. And I felt like the train is finally leaving the station. I think the issue is we forgot to connect all the cars. We've still got some details we got to work through first.
You know, it's challenging, right? These are weird times. What are you guys allowed to do right now across the sports landscape at UP?
We've got about 60% of our student athletes back. Everything is voluntary. Some kids have opted out. We have a small number of kids living in the dorms, mostly men's and women's basketball athletes. We have a pretty good population living in rental houses around the campus as we normally would. You know, we've evolved. When it started, it was, you know, with basketball, it was one student athlete with one basket and couldn't cross over, right? No coaches, nobody to rebound. We've slowly evolved into doing some 5-on-0 drills. We've got coaches there with masks and gloves, you know, two or three players shooting at the same basket. You know, per the state, we can't do any contact in basketball yet. So we're mindful of that. I think we're doing as much as we possibly can, given that we haven't had an event since March, to keep kids active and happy and mentally healthy and everything else. But we're probably about halfway there on where we need to be for basketball. And the other issue is, I mean, it's just people getting on the same page, John. And the state of Oregon's been great. Every decision they've been made has been more about science than politics, which we really appreciate. But for instance, the NCAA and the way they've tiered the risk of sports is different than the way the state of Oregon has tiered the risk of sports. So how do we juggle that, right? And the NCAA is telling us, hey, you're going to test basketball student athletes and staff 3 times a week. Now it might be daily here in Oregon based on what we're hearing and you've reported on the Pac-12. So we're trying to piece the puzzles together about where we need to land here.
What's the cost of the rapid results testing? Is it available to you? Is that a prohibitive issue?
We'll get there. We'll have to make some changes to make it happen. I think the thing to remember is we've saved a lot of our recruiting budget because we're not recruiting the first 6 months of our fiscal year. So that has helped. And from a team travel perspective, I mean, we're not going to do much more than conference air travel and play all of our friends in the Northwest on bus trips. So I think the money we've saved there will allow us to do the testing. But to your question, oh, it's probably, you know, low to mid six figures. The cost is changing by the day. We've done close to about 500 tests so far. We started with baseline, the fun PCR swab test, and now we're doing surveillance tests as the NCAA and the state have recommended. But the antigen test, and you know, if we could get there, even if it's not every bit as accurate, but darn close to what the swabs are, that allows you, if you have a positive test, to get that kid out of circulation right away.
Scott Lakem is with us. He's the athletic director of the University of Portland. I've been wondering about this because in California, the governor came out and said, look, we're not standing in the way of football. He eventually, his position ended up that, look, these are just guidelines. If USC and UCLA wanted to practice, they could go out and practice. It's not like they would go and arrest them. What would happen in Oregon if you guys just decided you're going to play basketball, you're going to scrimmage as always? Somebody come knocking on the door, do you get fined? What happens?
When you find out, let me know, John. That's a good question. I mean, I don't think anybody's driving around checking. You know, I don't think they're driving around checking hoops in the neighborhood that I see kids playing five-on-five basketball on.
Yeah.
But it's a good question. I mean, we'd much prefer to work through the governor's office, and they've, like I said, and I'm not just saying this, they've been really good to listen to our concerns and where we need to get. And as a state, we've slowly, you know, the Blazers came and Timbers and Timbers 2, now Pac-12. I think probably PSU and us are the next frontier. But it's also a risk thing, right? What they're telling us we shouldn't do puts our kids more at risk, and that's the last thing we want to do.
Scott, you know, the soccer season, you're looking at kids that, you know, and that is one of your bread and butter sports. That I know in men's soccer, everybody looking to see what Nick Karlin-Voigt is going to do, and big recruiting class. You know, how do you rectify like the relative, you know, safety that some sports would have versus, you know, basketball versus soccer, one sport to another? Is the NCAA giving you guidance sport to sport, or is it kind of a blanket resolution that they'll come up with?
No, we're getting very much guidance sport to sport. We've gotten three versions of this NCAA resocialization guidelines you've seen. If you want to do the light 38-page reading, I invite you to do it. I'm happy to send it along. But it's very much tiered, right? So tennis, we don't have to test near as much in season as we do with basketball and soccer. Totally different games and tiers. Where it does get tricky is the NCAA is telling us, hey, soccer's high risk. In the state of Oregon, soccer's medium risk. So it's, you know, one arm's telling you to do one thing and the other arm is telling you to do the other. But it all comes down to testing. And when you get into the competition season, and that's probably where this daily comes in those sports, you got to test probably close to every day or at least 3-4 times a week. In a tennis or a cross country or some other sports, there's a little flexibility to not test as often because the risk is different.
At some schools, you have seen wide spikes, Arizona being one. Arizona's saying, look, we can do the rapid result testing, but meanwhile, the dormitories there are like a petri dish for this thing, and it's caused the president of that university to say, students are being irresponsible, I'm going to lock you down. Do you have reasonable confidence that athletes will behave differently than the average student? How do you control that?
Well, you don't. They're 18 to 22-year-old. I think we've been fortunate. Our kids have done a pretty nice job. Where we're in a different spot, John, and it'll get harder for us, I think, in the spring, is at this point in time, our residence halls are basically closed. I mean, we're all online with our classes. So the residence halls are a very small number with student-athletes, ROTC students, nursing students in clinicals, a couple of specific groups. So they're spread out. They're in single rooms. There's not as much risk. But I'm reading the same stories you are. If we come back in the spring to in-person classes, the risk goes up. I mean, we've, you know, had significant conversations with student athletes about, you know, the backyard barbecue is not a great idea right now. Sitting in the garage and blasting music, eight of you in close contact, is not great. And we've, you know, we've had to crack down in ways, I think, with discipline that we normally wouldn't. We're not kicking everybody off of teams, but, you know, if we've had to suspend somebody because we're getting multiple reports of not social distancing and not following what the county and state is asking us to do, we're asking them to rectify that because that puts everybody else at risk.
Outside in, you know, you're able to see what the Big Ten did, the Pac-12 did. I mean, it's evident that the Pac-12 is just scrambling now because the Big Ten decided to play. How does that look from your vantage point when you see conferences acting that way? I feel like the Pac-12 should have had its own plan, and if it wanted to play, it felt like it was safe to play, it should have already been there.
It's John, the thing that's infinitely frustrating for, and I would say, you know, UP is in the middle of the Division I fish tank, right? We're somewhere in the mid-major. There's some sports we compete at the top, and they're somewhere in the middle or the bottom third, but we're in the middle of the fish tank. The thing that I've been in this business 25 years. I was at Stanford a long time and at the WCC. The Power Five was always on the same page before, John. I felt with, you know, Mike Slive and John Swofford and the other commissioners, they all marched together. The fact that the Power Five is not on the same page trickles down to the rest of us. The fact, to your point, you've got three Power Fives that are up and running with football. You've got a fourth that's just started. You've got a fifth that's not sure. If those guys that drive the financial train and drive all the votes in the association aren't on the same page, what does that mean for the other 26 leagues? And I think you're seeing it means a heck of a lot of uncertainty for all of us.
Yeah. How does that affect you when you talk about, you know, that trickles down to the rest of you? It's just the uncertainty?
Well, I mean, especially with the Pac-12, I think, as I mentioned before, nobody on the West Coast is playing at all right now, right? We're all sitting and staring at each other and really hoping the Pac-12 gets out of the garage. I think you're seeing the Mountain West is trying to move a little bit, which is good, and we're really trying to push on the basketball front. But it's helped. I mean, for instance, look at the SEC, John. SEC is going. The Sun Belt, the Southland, and some of those guys, they're playing soccer and volleyball too. They're going in the shadow of the SEC in that region. We don't have that. And part of it is we're being conservative with how we're treating the virus, which is a good thing. Don't get me wrong. But the West Coast, we're at a standstill. And it's interesting for me. I'm on the NCAA Women's Soccer Selection Committee now. You know, how do you choose at-large candidates when you got half the teams playing a full schedule and half of them playing just conference games and some not playing at all? It's kind of a mess out there.
I appreciate you saying that. I think that's great insight. The Pac-12 coaches are going to meet tomorrow. It appears as though they're not on the same page with the timeline. You know, you guys, how does that work in your conference where the coaches meet? Obviously, you want to present a unified front, but how does that work when you've got a faction of coaches who are going, we're not ready to play, and another that say, we are ready to play, we really feel like we need to be part of the playoff?
We're fortunate, and I know you know Gloria Navarre as our commissioner. We've had three commissioners in a row who are just basketball experts. Jamie Zaninovich, who's, I think, done a really good job with Pac-12 basketball in some tough spots. Lynn Holtzman, who runs women's basketball at the NCAA, and Gloria Navarez, and we're so basketball focused. We've been thinking about this stuff since June and gotten our coaches on the same page. And I think what we've had to say, candidly, John, is from an autonomy perspective, everybody's in a different place. And as a league, we're okay with that. Utah has less restrictions than California, right? And Washington and Oregon are somewhere in the middle. I think we've all told each other, if somebody's a little further along, that's okay. We don't want to hold you back. Because we had those discussions 3 months ago. Our men's basketball coaches were on a call. Our women's basketball coaches were on a call. The mess now is scheduling. I don't think you're going to get anybody to agree on what that looks like. And if you pod, if you bubble, all of those things. But credit to our commissioner and our presidents. We had these conversations in June.
Scott, I really am hopeful that everyone will be safe. I think we all agree on that. How confident are you with a basketball season approaching that if it does happen and you guys do take the court, that you can look at parents and say, hey, we're doing the right thing by your kids?
Well, we're not going to play if we don't, right? I think I feel really good about where the NCAA guidelines are with surveillance testing. And we're going to have to limit travel, John. We're going to have to be thoughtful on that. But I think there's a path forward, especially with the testing that's been reported, the fact that we can get the tests and we can get the results quickly. Are there going to be bumps in the road? Yes. I mean, we've seen that with football programs in the last week or two. But at this point, I'm pretty confident, especially with the way we're operating on campus, that we can do it safely. We're going to have to do it differently. You know, we're not going to fly to non-conference games unless something really changes. We'll play the Huskies and the Beavers and the Vikings and everybody else. But we've been doing this since June 15th. We've had to call audibles and make changes, and we'll continue to do that. But if it wasn't safe, I wouldn't have our kids here.
Scott Lakem, UP Athletic Director. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you, man.
Thanks, John. Good talking to you.
All right, there he is. Grab the podcast. SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcast. The Big Splash is coming up. Guys, I hate to say it, but I may have cursed kids in Los Angeles County when we talked about Halloween earlier in the week. Remember, I think it was Monday, I raised the idea of Halloween, should it be canceled or not? You guys remember that?
Yeah, your wife definitely was hoping that was not the case.
Apparently, Los Angeles County is saying no trick-or-treating for kids there. They want to curb the possibility of a spike or super spreader event involving Halloween. And I feel like I hadn't heard any of that until I brought it up. Halloween events in Los Angeles are being, Los Angeles County, they're saying no. They're saying don't do it. Celebrate it at your own house. They're saying trunk-or-treating is a good way to do that. Trunk-or-treating. You know, you guys know what that is?
sounds sinister, but I'm going to guess that it's just like, what, you put the candy in the trunk of your car?
Premise is simple. Bunch of parents get together. You deck out your trunk like it's your house. And the kids will go around and go from car to car collecting the goods. That way no one's handing it to them. That's like, you know, set out like in the back of your car or the tailgate or whatever you put down or the hatchback. And kids can meander from car to car trunk or treating. I don't know if that helps. Is that a better idea than going door to door?
No, that doesn't make any sense at all. Like, no? It's the same. You're going to still be like in a parking lot full of people.
It's going to take that spreading party somewhere else.
Yeah.
Our kids kind of burn out. Like they do, like maybe 8 or 10 houses and they kind of burn out. They don't have a lot of endurance. I'm a little disappointed. It's like they haven't trained for it all year. They're walking around and they go, okay, that's enough. You know, I kind of feel like, you know, as far as trick-or-treating goes, they're more sprinters than marathoners.
They're 4 and 6. What yeah. do you expect?
That's kids in general, right?
Let's go. We're going up the hill. Come on. We used to do, it was a volume business when I was a kid. these guys are in it for the, you know, there's a lot of chatter at the door. I was like, trick-or-treat, right on to the next house.
John, I'm dying to know what you dressed up as a kid for Halloween.
Oh, I can't remember. I think one. Okay, all right, here's a costume that I look back on and I'm like shaking my head because my dad had played professional baseball. He had all of these uniforms that were professional baseball uniforms because in the 1960s or, you know, late 60s, they would throw the major league uniforms from the season before on the clubhouse floor at the beginning of spring training. And so my dad, they'd say, take one if you want one. My dad would always take a jersey. So I would wear like the New York Mets jerseys from 1968, 1969.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.